You're listening to the Youth Critic Podcast on KHZ Network. Find us on Facebook at DecibelUNG Radio and find us on Twitter at DecibelUNG.
But it happened.
If you like this episode, please leave a like and comment on our iTunes page at KHZ Network. And now for the podcast.
I would just want a simple life. I just want to hold down a job, make some friends. You know, pay my bills.
Even if this was possible, you'd need 20 people.
Seven people.
Why do you need to do this?
Because it's what I'm good at.
How long would it take you to make seven pieces of jewelry?
5 or 6 hours.
How long if I told you you didn't have to live with your mother anymore?
Is it tomorrow if I squid what you need?
Less.
What's your name? Name Ball. What's your real name?
8 Ball.
I'm gonna be really poor.
What if we could make all this go away?
I just found me a brand new box of matches.
Can I get my watch back, please? And hers as well.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Youth Critic Reacts. I am your host, Kel Smith, and on this episode, we are going to be going over basically just catching up on all the June releases that have come out so far. Since I've not been able to do an episode with anyone on Upgrade, Ocean's 8, or Hereditary, or even Hotel Artemis. So we're going to focus on those four films in particular. And yes. So starting out with Ocean's 8, because ladies go first. So my history with the Ocean's franchise is very limited. I've only seen, I think, the first movie and then bits and pieces of the original of the sequels on TBS or TNT when I was a teenager. So it's not because I didn't, you know, love the Ocean's franchise or I didn't care for it. It was kind of ahead of my time. They were adult movies that were made. They were not made for me when they were coming out. So I kind of just have never paid attention to it. I know they're very huge and they have great casts and whatnot. And I do remember bits and pieces from them, but I haven't seen them in a while. So with this movie, I was very much like, I like Gary Ross as a director. Steven Soderbergh is coming back, and I've really been watching more and more of his work, of Soderbergh's work, and really, you know, loving his craft. And I really was, you know, excited for this. And also, you know, you had this great cast of Sandra Bullock, Kate Blanchett, Helena Bonham Carter, Sarah Paulson, Mindy Kaling, I think, Rihanna. I mean, the list just goes on and on and on. Anne Hathaway, yeah, it just goes on and on and on. And I was just really excited for this movie and really excited for what Gary Ross would do with it for this, because while I'll admit Gary Ross is very journeyman in his directing style, it's not as visually distinct or visually, you know, visually as interesting as like what Soderbergh would do or what most filmmakers would do. I mean, I would argue that Francis Lawrence from the Hunger Games movies did a more dynamic job and had more, you know, a more visual dynamic job on his sequels. Other than the first, that was different from Gary Ross's first Hunger Games movie. So going into this, I knew we were not going to probably get the directing flourishes that were going to be as good as what, you know, Soderbergh had done in his three films. But I knew that, maybe I was hoping that Gary Ross would come through with a really good screenplay, because that's always been the trademark of Gary Ross. He's a very accomplished screenwriter. Always has kind of been, you know, a go-to script doctor for a lot of productions. So I was very interested in what he would do for an Ocean's 8 movie from a screenwriting level, especially since he was the co-writer. And I went into this movie and I liked bits and pieces. I really liked the cast, but there were just, it felt like there were things missing in this movie beside the visual, you know, dynamics and flourishes that, you know, Soderbergh had brought. Not only those were missing, but it also felt like character beats, emotional development, and things, you know, that should have, you know, helped bridge this team together and made you believe that this is an actual team of people or a team of women that would get together and have a fun heist. And that's really what was missing for me in this movie. And that's why I would say it's a solid, good movie, but it's not a great heist film, because one of the things that Oceans did always very well, from what I took away from it, was there was banter between the characters. There was, you know, these characters were developed. They had stakes, and there was more to them than just, you know, their position. And that was what was missing here, is that you just got a bunch of characters who were stereotyped, and also they had their own position. So, and that was where I felt like Ocean's 8 kind of faltered, is in its lack of character development. And that really is what hurt the film, because Sandra Bullock is the only person that really has a clear goal other than money. Like, she's the only one that wants something out of it. Everything else is like, everyone else is just kind of there for either the money, or they're just, you know, they're just there to be there. And that's what was so disappointing, was that it really just felt more and more like these characters, they were just, you know, they're kind of acting their roles. And that's what really hurt, is in watching this movie. But that doesn't mean the movie is completely awful. It doesn't mean that the film doesn't completely work. It just means that the film is kind of average, because I wasn't really that emotionally invested in particularly any of the characters, and some of it I found I would think would be somewhat offensive, particularly Rihanna's character and Awkwafina's character. So other than that, I thought it was a fine movie. I thought there were visual flourishes throughout, but nothing as visually dynamic as Soderbergh's previous films. But other than that, I thought it was a really well done, really well done heist. I thought, you know, overall it was clever. Some things I felt like probably should have been ironed out more. But other than that, I thought Ocean's 8 was a really solid heist movie. You know, that's nice and breezy fun, that would be a lot better suited for when we can all have a bunch of friends over at the house and watch the movie together. So with that, I'm giving the movie a C+. Next up, as a quadriplegic, Upgrade.
It must be frustrating for you, someone who likes to get things done with their hands.
Here's the thing.
Four guys murdered my wife.
Don't you catch up!
If I could find these men, I'd do it.
What if I told you I could offer you something that would enable you to walk again? I call it STEM, a computer chip that has the potential to change everything. It's a new, better brain.
I am STEM, the system operating your body for you.
Can anybody else hear you?
No, only you. May I point something out? In the drone surveillance footage, Sirk Brantner, Marine Corps, address 414 Citrus, New Ground. You'll need a plan.
I got this.
So Upgrade is the sci-fi horror action film from Leigh Whannell, who is the co-creator of the Saw franchise and the Insidious franchise. And this is his second movie, I think. And it's a really good movie. And that's what I'll say, is not to leave any more suspense, but I thought it's a sci-fi cult classic in the making. That's, you know, not only because the box office is kind of teetering out and it's kind of about to leave theaters, but I felt like Upgrade, you know, it has that, you know, cult, you know, kind of, you know, feel where people are going to look at it years and years from now and appreciate it, you know, for not really necessarily bold or interesting new ideas, but for its style and for its low techiness, and also for its B movie quality that's given a very A treatment, or given the appearance of an A treatment. And that's why I think it's going to really last, you know, the longest amongst, you know, amongst sci-fi and action nerds, is that it really does lend itself to, you know, to all of the sci-fi tropes, and it feels very much like a RoboCop / Terminator movie in the midst of this body horror film. And that's what, and I think that's, you know, the style that, you know, Upgrade kind of, you know, appeals to and is, you know, honest about, and it works very well. A lot of this movie is very well meticulously done. The style feels very much, you know, like the very much feels like the action scenes from James Wan's Furious 7, which, you know, if you don't know, James Wan and Lee Whannell, they're, you know, really good friends. Of course, they work together on the Saw and the Insidious franchise. So for this movie, they did a really, you know, so for Lee Whannell, he borrows a lot from Wan's style that he brought to the Furious 7. You know, like the camera falling, you know, following the, you know, the movements of the action scenes and the, you know, characters. He does that and expands upon that a lot in this movie. And it works very well within the action, that you can tell what's happening. And also the action is realistic. It's gory. It's terrifying. And also it's relatable to Logan Marshall Green's, you know, character, Gray. You relate to him the whole way through because, you know, he's not a violent person. He's just, but he wants justice, and that turns into revenge. And this is, and STEM is the, you know, the device that's implanted into his spine to give him, you know, more mobility again. It allows him to, it allows him to, you know, act out that, you know, his revenge to the point where he loses more and more of his humanity. And I think that's kind of the interesting part of Upgrade, is that as the film goes along, you see, you know, Gray lose more and more of his humanity, and STEM takes over. And that's really the most compelling part of the movie until the final like 10 minutes of the movie, and then it becomes like this, you know, oh shit movie. And that's honestly what I loved about the movie, is it's an oh shit action horror body horror sci-fi movie that is just a fun time at the movies with an oh shit, holy, you know, shit ending that leaves you kind of wanting more. Like, I literally tweeted out after the movie was done, I want to see more adventures of Gray and STEM. I want to see where that goes. So if you haven't already, please do yourself a favor. See Upgrade. It's incredible to watch on the big screen. And it's just a fun summer movie. It's one of the more fun and also really interesting summer movies we've gotten so far. So with that, I give Upgrade a B+. Next up is Hereditary.
Come on, Peter. Here's your suit.
It's heartening to see so many strange new faces here today. I know my mom would be very touched and probably a little suspicious.
Um, So A24's horror input that includes movies like The Witch and It Comes at Night are both equally on their own merits, very well made, very calculated, and very off the beaten path horror films. In that they're not really horror films as much as they're more psychological thrillers, or in the case of It Comes at Night, they're paranoia thrillers. And Hereditary is trying to be both. It's trying to be a movie about the paranoia of things coming at, you know, the characters, but also the psychological tension of what is happening in, you know, within Peter's mind, what's happening throughout the film, what is real, what is just, you know, in the minds of these characters. And also there's the drama element that is apparent in all three of these, you know, movies that I've been taught, of these movies, The Witch, It Comes at Night, and Hereditary, in that they're both dramas about the dissolution of, you know, families, that's, you know, just falling apart, you know, ever so slightly, and the drama and the horror of that happening because of either paranoia or, you know, of something, you know, they think is supernatural, but maybe in a different light, it probably is just mental illness or a disease. Something is just rattling them. And that's why I think, and Hereditary tries to strike the balance of being psychologically horrifying and trying to leave you with a sense of, you know, is this in the minds of these characters? Because it is established earlier on in the movie, and I don't think this is a spoiler, but, you know, Toni Collette's character, she makes it abundantly clear in front of, like, a group therapy session that she has a family history of mental illness, and so we're trying to decipher, is this mental illness, what's really happening, and there are some horrifying and truly traumatic sequences in the movie, but it's so off kilter that sometimes it can be alienating, because you want to care about these people because they're going through a horrible ordeal. The ordeals that this family goes through is truly unsettling and truly just, you know, it's unforgiving and it's unrelenting, you know, how many ordeals this family, you know, endures. But in the end, it's so... But how the events kind of unfold in the movie is where I kind of draw the line in Hereditary, where I kind of, you know, put my foot down saying this is too silly for even, you know, for this movie that's so high on itself. Because the way certain things unfold, it unfold in this movie, it feels very much like it's just too convoluted, you know, to just even match what the script is trying, the script symbolism and the themes that it's trying to do. It's like the movie feels like it's bending over backwards to, you know, to reach a certain level, to reach a certain point of horror that really in the end wouldn't really happen. It wouldn't really unfold this way. And I feel like while I do have empathy for all four of these characters for what they're going through, it still just feels at the end of the day like, so what? And also the other big issue that I had with Hereditary was that the film ultimately feels the film ultimately comes to this conclusion that I feel like we've seen not only in The Witch but in so many other different possession movies. It feels like, we've seen this so many times. And so for me, the ending, while it is shocking and it's horrifying and it is left open if it really is, you know, a mental illness or a supernatural possession, it still feels very much like we've seen this before. And the shock of that kind of ending has kind of dissipate over time because so many horror movies have done this before. So, and on top of that, I didn't really care about what was happening. I mean, I cared to an extent with the characters, but at the end of the day, I was just like, this ending, I've seen it so many times that I'm kind of numb to the shock value of it. And on top of that, you know, it's not really that well, and honestly, the payoff doesn't quite work. Because the movie doesn't quite, movie wants so badly to be ambiguous, but we're not quite sure what we're seeing is real anyway, if that makes any sense. So Hereditary, it's not a bad or completely, you know, defunct movie. It's well made. Like, Ari Aster does an incredible job, you know, crafting his shots meticulously well to, like, a Wes Anderson point. And it works. Like, the set design feels creepy. Like, every part of Hereditary feels creepy and, you know, it's a haunted house that you don't want to keep going back to, but you're more curious because you want to see the inner workings of it. You want to study how they're doing this, how they made this. You want to keep studying, even though the content in the movie is very sickening, it's still disturbing. And the shots, you know, and the shot choices and how they all build up to each other can be really disturbing and very and meticulously well done. But in the end, I really wasn't that into what was going on in the story. So while Hereditary, it's another well-made, well-done movie by A24, I still kind of felt like it was okay at best. And with that, I'm giving it another C+. Next up, Hotel Artemis.
Violent riot in California history. The largest civil unrest.
3 minutes. Open the vault now!
Oh, that's real nice.
You don't want it?
No, I really do.
Hit the ground now!
I need to make a call.
Hello.
All right, this is the last review for this episode, and Hotel Artemis is the ensemble piece movie that is about, basically, it's kind of like if someone made a movie about The Continental from John Wick, but with a completely different cast. And that's essentially what Hotel Artemis is. It's that idea of a hotel that basically is the safe haven for criminals and of all kinds, where they just, you know, can sit there and heal up their wounds, you know, after a bank robbery or whatnot, and they can just hide from the police, lay low, and then when they get better, they can walk out and leave. That is what Hotel Artemis is. It's a movie that is about this one night where Sterling K. Brown's character and his brother they just finished a bank robbery and they need to get out. They need to get away from the police while a riot is going on because of something water and some corporation is like holding like the water hostage in LA in the future or something. So there's a riot that's going on outside Hotel Artemis, and Sterling K. Brown is trying to, you know, get his brother back to health. And while this is happening, they realize Sterling K. Brown's character realizes that his brother stole some property from the wrong person, basically the head crime boss of Los Angeles, played by Jeff Goldblum. And now there's a race to get out of Hotel Artemis because now the head chief is coming up because he had suffered from a flesh wound. So now they're trying. So now Sterling K. Brown's character is trying to get out. And then in the midst of this, you have Sophia Bautella's character there. And then you have Charlie Day's character. They're all trying to, you know, patch up their wounds or trying to, you know, lay low as well from, you know, cops and whatnot and then leave. So and that's what's happening right in this movie. And overall, it's a fun, pulpy B movie. That's basically what it is. It's a fun, pulpy B movie where you get to see a bunch of really good character actors like Sophia Bautella, Sterling K. Brown, Jodie Foster, Jeff Goldblum, Charlie Day, all just, you know, have fun for a few weeks in one confined location, and then, you know, blow each other up. And that's really what the film is. It's a fun, pulpy B movie that may start a franchise one day. I don't know. I don't remember how well Hotel Artemis is doing at the box office, but it is a fun, pulpy B movie from Drew Pierce, who helped us bring Iron Man 3 to fruition. And I think Drew Pierce has a good, like, he's a good director. Like, he's a really very good director, a very fine writer, and knows how to, you know, wrangle a bunch of character actors. So, Hotel Artemis is a fun movie, worth checking out if it's still in the theater. I can't remember if it's there. I know I saw it a week ago, and, it's a fun movie, and I think, you know, and I think you should check it out. Check it out eventually. It's a fun, pulpy B movie that just wants to be nothing more than just fun. With that, I'm giving Hotel Artemis a B minus. And I think we're done for the June catch up. For now, I will have a review for Incredibles 2 in the next couple of days. And on top of that, we are going to continue the retrospectives again. We've already posted episodes for Hot Shots Part 2, Super Mario Brothers, Cliffhanger, and most recently, the Jurassic Park franchise. We're going to have more episodes. We're going to have the Last Action Hero podcast. Oh, by the way, happy 25th. Last Action Hero, because today of this recording is when, because 25 years ago, Last Action Hero came out and kind of fizzled out because of Jurassic Park. But we will be talking about that. That episode will come out probably this Sunday. And look out for those. And we'll have Sleepless in Seattle episode come out right after that. And then we'll have The Firm come out right after that. And then we'll have some more episodes come out afterwards. Thanks everyone for listening this week. Please comment down below and let us know how we're doing. Also, subscribe if you're on iTunes and Stitcher. And subscribe if you're on the YouTube channel at KHZ Productions. Please check us out. We are working through these episodes. We're getting them out as quickly as we can. Grain of Salt is still coming out. Please check that out. Thanks everyone for listening. You can follow, before we go, you can follow, if you want to follow me on Twitter, you can follow me at MovieKale. You can also follow the show at The Youth Critic, and you can also follow the channel that distributes this podcast at KHZ Network. Thanks everyone. We will be back with you in a couple days for Incredibles 2 review. A possible Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom review coming in a couple days, and we'll have more retrospectives coming. See you all very soon.
Do you remember the first time you saw a dinosaur?
Hey, Blue.
We don't really believe it. It's like A miracle. Something's coming.
It's the T-Rex.